Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Good morning, H-Town. Time to go to work.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. I paused a little bit there like Sean usually does when he checks his own brain to be sure he knows what day of the week it is. Sean is off for a few days. He's going up to watch his daughter compete, Judy, up at Harvard with her NCAA, I think the regional championships. I don't know exactly what's going on right now. But Sean will be gone. Wade Smith, former Houston Texans, Pro Bowl offensive lineman, is in with us. So I'm glad to have Wade here as we kick off OTAs. At the very beginning, just want to just acknowledge and mention the tragedy in Uvalde yesterday. And, you know, whatever support we can provide here, but as well as to all of you who have children in school. And I know it presents a different whole set of challenges these days that we weren't necessarily always aware of growing up, or we didn't have growing up. So with that, welcome in, Wade.
Yeah, man, it's a sad day. I'm glad to be here with you. That situation that happened about four hours or so west of Houston, on the other side of San Antonio, is about as sad as it comes, man. And it hits home for me because yesterday was awards day at my daughter's school. I have four daughters. My third oldest, she's a fourth grader. And from all reports, there was a bunch of second and fourth graders that were killed in that shooting out there in Uvalde. And so I remember sitting in that class yesterday. Beautiful day, excited because my daughter is getting awards, and all the kids are getting awards in class. And I was sitting in the class. I looked around the room, and I was there with my wife, and I'm looking at around the room, and there was no majority of anything. Like, there was, it's one thing I love about my neighborhood, I love about the elementary school that my kid is in, is that there was about 40 or so kids, the two classes combined together to do the award ceremony or whatever. And there wasn't a majority of anything. There was people, there were kids that looked like your kids, like my kids, like Ellie's kids, like Gupta's kids, like whoever's kids that you can think of in that classroom, and everybody's up there getting awards, and, you know, getting achievement awards for what they're doing in science and math and perseverance and most athletic and all these different things that they're getting awards for, and everybody's getting clapped for. And it was a great morning, a great, you know, experience. And then you come out of that, and then you realize that not too far away in our great state of Texas, there was kids that had the same thing going on for them that day, and it didn't end the same way. And, It hits home to me. It's very, very sad. I don't know the answer to what you do about it. And, you know, a lot of people have answers, and a lot of people have opinions on what you do about it. But I think the thing you do not do about it is get numb to it. I think the thing you not do about it is not empathize and sympathize with the people, because it could be you. It could be us. It could be my kid. It could be your kid. It could be our family members, whether it's in Buffalo, whether it's in California, where it's here in Texas. And, you know, we're going to do this show kind of with a heavy heart, but we're going to entertain you. We're going to give you a lot of stuff to think about, talk about, and continue to try to move forward.
Yeah, that's and the kids from Santa Fe High School, obviously, that went through that several years ago. I was just and continue to be amazed by the response that some of the people in that community have had after that. And that's all you can do is try to respond the best way you can. As I said, we'll mention it a few times during the day. And if anybody has any thoughts or calls or texts that you think we need to get out there, please feel free to let us know. But their sports world, of course, moves on. And the Texans had OTAs yesterday. The Astros beat the long despised Cleveland Guardians. Hated the Guardians ever since I was a kid. See, that's why you name a team the Guardians, because it's a lot easier to say that than you can't say. You got to be careful. The transcript looks awful if you say something like I hate Indians. I hate the Indians. Right. So I hate the Guardians.
That doesn't work out very well.
Yeah, the long despised Guardians. Framber Valdez did some really cool things. Like he's changed frambering from a bad verb to a good verb after a really big battle with Ramirez in the first inning. He came back and pitched a hell of a game. And Deshaun Watson was on Real Sports last night. Or I should say they discussed Deshaun Watson on Real Sports last night. We'll have a little bit of that audio in the next segment. The Texans OTAs kicked off, and I guess the most notable thing that happened, usually on Tuesday, Wade, the way I get my sports news in the afternoon is I get done with our show at 10 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And then for the next 5 hours, I do personal business and I don't check in on the news at all. And then I go on Clint and Show's show. And then they ask me questions about stuff that I don't have any, I'm not aware has happened. So yesterday, I try to get a feel for, okay, what are these guys talking about? What should I be concerned with?
Yeah.
And immediately Show peppered me with like three questions about the fact that Malik Collins and Laremy Tunsil weren't at OTAs. And I struggled because I don't know if you're like this. I try to put myself, when Show asks me, okay, what do their teammates feel about them not being at voluntary OTAs, off-season training activities, and the player in me wants to say, well, look, guys, kind of it's kind of a live and let live attitude in the offseason. You kind of got to let guys do what they want to do. But then the fan in me, and also kind of the player that wants to put up a good front, but also the fan in me inside is saying, yeah, those guys really need to be there. This team sucked last year, and those are two of the better players. They need to be there.
Yeah, I tell you what, man. I actually was listening to that segment yesterday, and I tried to put myself in that position, like, okay, when we were in the locker room, we was playing for the Texans, as far as the offensive line goes, like, did guys miss during OTAs and stuff? And for the most part, guys didn't miss. And if they did miss, it was kind of understood that if you missed, you had a legitimate reason why you missed. And if you had a legitimate reason why you missed, then guys didn't give a second thought about it. And so, when I'm listening to it and I'm listening to, the consternation about Laremy Tunsil and, he doesn't need to miss because of what happened, last season and all that type of stuff. I was thinking to myself, like, all right, Laremy Tunsil, if he was missing for the reasons that they're worried about him missing, and I was his teammate, he wouldn't miss. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it was understood. Peer pressure is a real thing, especially in locker rooms. It's a real thing, and so I look at it, if I was in that locker room, it wouldn't happen. If it was 2011, he wouldn't miss for those reasons that Show and Clint were concerned that he's missing for those reasons. So yeah. The only way I can do is to put myself in that position and say, well, if he missed, he missed because he was supposed to miss. And he had something going on. Maybe he had something going on with his family, or maybe he has something. There's a lot of different things that guys have to deal with outside the building, especially when it's not a mandatory situation. And so guys did not really feel some type of way about it. Like, I remember being in 2013 when Ed Reed was missing time because of whatever reasons. We had a problem with that. He had just came into the building. We lost a young player that was damn good because we basically decided to go that route instead of re-signing Glover Quinn. And so when Ed Reed wasn't there for those workouts in the offseason, myself and a bunch of guys had a problem with that, right? And then he ended up having surgery. Like, we had a problem with that. That's one thing. But when you have guys in the locker rooms that have been there and done that and have established themselves within the locker room, you don't think anything about it. It just gives another guy an opportunity to get some reps. I remember being in Kansas City with the Chiefs, and Brian Waters rarely did OTAs. Rarely. He had something going on, but it was Brian Waters, and he had respect in the locker room. And so I'm sure Laremy Tunsil has that type of respect in the locker room with the guys around him. And if he doesn't, then he wouldn't have missed. Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's exactly right. It's a case-by-case basis.
Right.
And especially when you bring a guy like Ed Reed in, who's supposed to be the veteran leader, that's supposed to show you guys how to win. Yeah, that's I'd like him to be here to show me how to win.
Right.
If that's the whole deal.
Right.
Instead of, trying to chase whoever stole his $50,000 satchel out of his car.
Yeah, you got a good memory, man. I forgot about that.
It was odd.
It's very odd. Yeah, very odd.
Framber Valdez had a really interesting performance last night. The Guardians home run against the Astros might have been the best sign yet that this Astros team is the real deal. Next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
So last night, the Astros were taking on the Guardians after dropping one in Game 1 in a moribund offensive performance. Framber Valdez goes out in the first inning, has a 12-pitch at-bat against Jose Ramirez. And Ramirez just kept fouling off pitch after pitch. Framber handled it so well. For the entire first 11 pitches, on the 12th pitch, this is what happened as the Cleveland broadcast describes it.
He drills it to deep left field, and it's not coming back, baby. Jose Ramirez tortures Framber Valdez. pause here in the first inning and gives the Guardians a 1-0 lead.
He had him, man. You could tell by the look on his face. And he threw one up, and he gave him swinging room. And I'll tell you, that's only the second home run he has allowed this year. And boy, did he work for that one. Number 11, what an at-bat.
So this is where Astros fans, I think, that have watched Framber Valdez develop through the years are really excited when they see this version of Framber Valdez, who faces adversity early in a game and then goes on to have a hell of a game. Because in that at-bat, wait, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the first inning or not, but it wasn't like Framber was off or anything. Ramirez just kept making contact everywhere. Like Framber was doing all his magical pitch movement, and there was just nothing that Framber could do anything about. And then he finally hangs one out on that 12th pitch, and off he went. But the thing that was notable about it was that it looked like the entire time I never felt like Framber got frustrated or fazed by it. He's just more like tipping his cap to Jose as he was doing it.
Yeah, you think about it, it just shows that, you know, he's maturing as a player. He's maturing as a best baseball player, and he's understanding that, hey, those guys get paid too. I think when you're first coming into the league and, you know, you have some success early on and things might not work out for you after that, you can find yourself getting frustrated because you're expecting yourself to continue to have that success. But the more you play, the more you realize that the guys across from you, you know, a lot of them are damn good too. And if you can understand that and say, all right, like you said, tip a cap to him, say, hey, he did a damn good job at that at bat, and then refocus and focus on the next guy, focus on the next play, all those cliches that come out, you're going to come out, you know, that much better for yourself and for your team. And that's what you saw out of Framber. Like, hey, okay, that's cool. You know, he made that play, but I'm gonna get the next guy out, and I'm going to continue to pitch well for the rest of this outing. And that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he had 43 pitches in the first two innings, and then after that, he never had more than 14 pitches in an inning until the seventh inning. But if you would have said, that was the classic one where if you would have said after that home run that he's going to go seven innings and put in a gem of a performance, old Framber wouldn't have done it. And the cool thing about Framber is that he's the best example to point to, I think, of a guy that's used sports psychology the exact right way. I used to be so skeptical of sports psychologists when I was a player, and then I met a couple of good ones, and like it changed me completely. And a lot of it is like, in football as a lineman, it doesn't, you know, it's not as high profile, obviously, but you deal with the same thing that anybody in any sport does. Is like the hardest thing to deal with sometimes is failure and not letting it derail you. And like, how do you come back from failure? So when you see him doing his breathing up there on the mound, and all that stuff, it's really cool to see it in action and actually working.
Yeah. I tell you what, like when I was playing, sports psychology was, they had those people on staff, but it wasn't something that guys like openly talked about. Yeah, I'm going upstairs to see the doc, or I'm going to, you know, go talk to get my mind right and stuff like that. I think there were, I'm sure there were guys that utilized it, but you know, we had coaches that, like when coaches say to yourself, they say to you, you know, play the next play, you know, put that one behind you and move on to the next play. That's something that a sports psychologist would tell you. Focus on the process, focus on the next play. And so you might not necessarily go see somebody in that realm, and somebody that has basically no dog in the fight. I think that's important that you're talking to somebody that has no dog in the fight, but you still get some of those same techniques and some of those same descriptions of how to function and to deal with processing failure, processing success from a variety of places, from your teammates, from your coaches, from a sports psychologist. I do think, you know, having that ability to move on to the next play, having that ability to understand that while I might have had some success here, I still have to refocus so I can have success against the next guy. I think that's important for you to be a professional for any extended period of time, and especially if you want to be a dominant player. And you know, Framber has the ability to be a dominant pitcher in this league. And so, you know, him utilizing breathing techniques, utilizing those things, that it's going to help him play at an optimal performance, that's good to know that he's doing those things, especially at such a young age.
The other thing that was really promising last night, or I said, I teased this as saying that that home run was one of the most promising things about this Astros team and proving that they're for real. I think I went back and I watched some of the Cleveland broadcast during that at-bat, that first inning, and it was really cool to hear them talk about Framber, but then they were also talking about the Astros lineup and how many different categories offensively that the Astros are actually number one in, except for that one advanced stat of runs where they just haven't produced. I feel a lot better about the fact that last night, after the Astros had been really bad with two outs, like they were like sixth worst in the league in OPS and with batting average when there were two outs. Last night, they were 4-for-8 with runners in scoring position. They had 7 two-out hits. Like, all that clutch stuff that, like, all the advanced statisticians will tell you, like, well, a lot of that's myth, and the whole clutch thing is a little bit, there's something to it. And you always worry that whether your team is clutch enough or not.
Right.
At the very least, last night, like, in a game two versus the Guardians relatively early in the season, they're showing that they can do it in all different areas.
Championship teams have timely hitting, period. Like, yeah. And I know that people can try to use statistics to disprove that, whatever. I would contend that it's the opposite of that. Like, hey, timely hitting is something that all championship ball clubs have. And so the Houston Astros are a team that's come to a point in their development as a franchise that people are expecting them to compete for championships every single year. And so that's what you want to see out of them. Even though, you know, I think they're 12 games over 500 right now, and you know, they're doing a good job of getting out of teams early and getting out on them and then holding on to leads late. Like, you're going to need them to have that timely hitting for them to win that championship, to get over that hump of actually winning a championship for the second time. You know, they've gotten to the World Series, what, I don't know how many times, 3 out of the last 5 years, I think it is.
Yep.
That's the type of team they are. So when you're a fan base, when you're looking at the Astros play, you're trying to find what's going to make the difference for us to get over the hump and go ahead and seal the deal, especially after the scandal. You want to show the world that, hey, the Astros, everybody knows that they're for real, but can they seal the deal? Timely hitting is one of those things. You know, getting base hits with runners in scoring position, those are the type of things, and those are the type of situations that championship teams do well. And so that was good to see the Astros do that last night.
Bryant Gumbel and his show Real Sports on HBO interviewed two of Deshaun Watson's accusers last night, as well as one of the Deshaun Watson's attorneys. We did learn some new things last night, and I think that Rusty Harden might be going on the PR attack right now. We've got some very interesting audio next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast, Sean Pendergast, your beloved co-host. Probably slightly more beloved than me, but that's cool. He's a fun-loving guy. He's off watching his daughter Judy compete in cross country this week, and I've got Wade Smith. Apologies, everybody. Wade Smith, former Houston Texan, in studio to replace Sean. Wade, did you happen to watch Real Sports last night when Bryant Gumbel and Soledad O'Brien took on the Deshaun Watson saga?
I did watch it, and I was slightly surprised at how much of a kind of a fair both sides of it way that they attacked the situation. I thought it was going to be a one-sided hit piece where Deshaun Watson was going to come out of it looking worse than he already has looked in the situation, but they gave kind of a balanced amount of time to both sides of the, I guess, the disagreement or the situation, however you want to put it, the yeah. allegations. And I didn't come out of it thinking to myself, yeah, that was really bad for Deshaun, or I didn't come out of it thinking to myself, all the girls, the women, they weren't very believable. Like, there was things that were said by the accusers that, you know, said to myself, oh, that sounds incredible. And then there was things that were brought up by Deshaun Watson's side of it. It wasn't Deshaun Watson because he didn't participate, but whether it was his lawyer or whether it was just the way that Real Sports reported it, they told both sides of the story. And I kind of felt myself after watching it thinking to myself, well, you know, the needle did not move in either direction. So it'll be interesting how the NFL viewed it, how Deshaun Watson's camp viewed it, how, you know, the other 20 accusers that did not participate in it, how they viewed it. Tony Busby, how he viewed it. But to me, there was no really movement of the needle after watching it.
Busby had his hair slicked back. Did you catch that? It was a whole new look for Busby. That was a bold move on Busby's part.
I did see that. I did notice that, like, while watching it, he tried to come off as I don't want to say sympathetic, but he tried to come off as like, hey, you know, I was just minding my own business, and you know these ladies came to me, and I felt like I needed to take up their cause. Whereas a lot of people here in Houston that know him and know kind of his background and, you know, how he's not going to shy away from the limelight, I think he tried to make sure he didn't give off that impression in the interview. And so it looked like to me he was trying to make himself seem more a sympathetic figure, because there's a lot of people outside of Houston that were watching that this is their first time seeing Tony Busby, and he probably knew, and it ended up happening, that he was going to take some personal attacks from Deshaun Watson's side of it. And so I think the whole deal was to try to win the court of public opinion, and so that was part of it, him trying to come across as more of a sympathetic lawyer that's trying to help these women out.
Yeah, the first few minutes, I thought, okay, this is going to be a bunch of stuff we already know, and we're not going to necessarily learn a whole lot new. But like you mentioned, when Ashley Solis starts going through, and then, you know, I've got the audio. I feel like it's too graphic for this time of day as kids are on their way to school and everything. So I'm not shying away from presenting that part of the story. But it is. It's graphic, and you can see how, if that is what happened to her, how disturbing it would be. Some of this we know from the depositions, but some of what she and Kyla Hayes, who's the other plaintiff that was interviewed, said, we know from the depositions and some of the testimony, but we haven't necessarily seen people say it. This was Ashley Solis describing the scene after the massage alleged incident, and how it, you know, it, she feels like Deshaun may have been threatening her career.
Solis says she waited for Watson to leave. But before he did, she says he delivered a parting message.
He just said, I know you have a career to protect, and I know you don't want anyone messing with it, just like I don't want anyone messing with mine. That's when I got really scared.
Why?
Because that sounded like a threat to me.
So, you know, and we knew that. I don't think she had actually described that on camera yet, but to people outside of Houston, I know a lot of people haven't seen any of these women necessarily. When we covered it here locally, a lot of that wasn't really on the radar nationally, and the news was keeping an arm's length distance away from that. The other part that, as you mentioned, it seemed like a pretty balanced treatment of this topic, that they were telling Deshaun's side of the story, even though Deshaun didn't get interviewed for this. They asked him and he declined, which I would have expected, because that's what I think you probably should do when you're in an ongoing legal situation like this. But one of the points that they brought up on Deshaun's side was that he'd had text conversations with a number of these plaintiffs afterwards, some of whom continue to make plans. Kyla Hayes, who was one of these massage therapists who texted him afterwards, who was being interviewed by HBO, explained her side of that scenario.
In response to these claims, Watson's legal team has challenged the accuser's credibility, pointing out that some, including Kyla Hayes, remained in contact with Watson for months after the alleged assaults, in some cases even discussing possible follow-up appointments.
People will look at your interaction after what you're saying was an assault and say, how could it be an assault? Here she is texting with him.
I wasn't sure what he was capable of. He could have physically assaulted me. He could have bashed my business. So I had to protect myself and my business the best way I saw fit. Did I ever see him again after that? No. Did I give him the runaround? Yes.
Wade, that right there, I felt like that little nugget out of the entire 20-minute piece on Real Sports kind of just got to the heart of how difficult it is with these cases, because I think that was the one where I felt most like, okay, I can see both sides of this, where Deshaun's argument could make a lot of sense, at least in the cases where the women were corresponding with him afterwards. But then you hear Kyla Hayes speak, and I say, yeah, I could totally see that being the actual case too, that if somebody that you feel has power over you, that maybe you can keep at bay without angering, but without exposing yourself to, like, that makes sense as well.
Yeah, both, like when I heard her say that, to me, that was logical. That was reasonable. And she said it with credibility. And so, but at the same time, you know, Deshaun denies that, you know, Ashley Solis, he denied that he said those things to her, basically threatening her career. But when you hear Kyla Hayes say, I felt like, you know, if I did not communicate with him, if I burned that bridge, then maybe, you know, that could come back on my business. To me, that's a plausible, you know, explanation. And so, like you said, we're left here trying to figure out, all right, what's what, and nobody knows the intent of what was done and what was said, except for Deshaun Watson and each one of these women that have, you know, subsequently accused him. And so,
yeah,
we're left here to try to figure out, you know, what's what, and the NFL is left here to try to figure out, you know, how credible are these witnesses, and what should we do about it on our end? Because, you know, especially with the hard stance that they took, you know, Roger Goodell took in his press conference not too long ago, basically saying that, you know, domestic violence and sexual assault is not going to be accepted any longer in the NFL, because, you know, the NFL has dropped the ball on those particular topics for years and years and years. And, you know, they kind of drew a line in the sand, and that's where you have people saying, in one regard, you know, Deshaun Watson could be out for the season. You know, he could be suspended for the entire year. Some people saying it 8 games, 4 games. And if Lisa Friero comes back and says, hey, I don't think he deserves to have any punishment, any suspension, then he won't get any suspension because Roger Goodell can't do anything about it. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the NFL weighs in this investigation to where they, and then with how they use that to come up with a punishment.
Yeah. I don't, along the lines of what you were saying initially, I don't know if, like this particular incident, I don't think this necessary, or this particular program, the Real Sports treatment of it, I don't know if this probably would have swayed Goodell one way or the other. Like you said, it didn't feel like it was some kind of a hit piece or one-sided or anything like that. I think it really did a really good job of just showing how murky these things are, and that when it comes to not prosecuting something like this, or a grand jury recommending not prosecuting, I, like, when it's he said, she said, you can see how there's just the actual evidence is sometimes just not enough to actually go to trial. The other part that's been interesting the last couple of days, and I wonder how much of this has to do with the fact that now Deshaun is in a place where he's going to play, and the PR side of it becomes a lot more crucial and critical, is it seems like Rusty Harden and his team are a little bit more on the attack after they kind of they sat and laid in wait, and Harden's talked about this a couple times in the last couple days, that once they realized that Busby was just waging this all-out social media campaign, they realized that they probably couldn't win it, and they had to kind of sit back and wait. One of the things that his team did, which, as Brian Gumbel describes it last night, he says that Deshaun's team reached out to them at the 11th hour, and this attorney, Leah Graham, who is one of Deshaun Watson's attorney, addressed who she thought was the real culprit in all of this, and she set her sights right on Tony Busby.
For Deshaun Watson to be innocent, 22 women would have to be lying. Why would the public believe one man versus 22 different women?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. First, it's 22 women. It's one lawyer. There's only one lawyer who was willing to take these cases. And as we know from Ashley Solis's deposition, Mr. Busby was not the first, probably not even the second or third lawyer that she went to. But he was the only one to take her case. Why? Not because it had merit, but because he would use these cases to increase his social media following and, quite frankly, to get on shows like this one.
Yeah, so I feel like that's a pretty big allegation to levy against an attorney. Busby has never shied away from getting publicity any way possible.
Yeah, and when you think about it, this is not the first time we've heard that type of defense or that type of explanation of why there's so many accusers, is because we knew from the jump, we were seeing the social media post of, hey, if you've had any encounter with him, please, you know, reach out to us, and you know, we'll discuss with you about potentially, you know, helping you through your situation as well. And that's what she mentioned in there, talking about he solicited clients. And I don't know if that, how frowned upon that is in the lawyer world. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how frowned upon that is or not. But that was Deshaun Watson's team's way of explaining away why there were so many women that came forward. The thing about it is that each one of these accusers are getting their, they're getting depositions done. You know, investigators are involved. They're being questioned. The credibility is being ascertained. And then eventually a decision is going to be made, and you just move forward with that. Now, she mentioned that there were so many there's so many lawyers that did not want to get involved with the case. And he was like the third or fourth lawyer that Busby talking about was like the third or fourth lawyer she went to. You know, that I can see where they're trying to use that, you know, against, you know, Ashley Solis. But at the same time, lawyers take cases that they feel like that they can win.
Yeah.
Right. And so in a lot of times what cases they can win has to do with the way the law is put into place. And so that doesn't necessarily mean that because a lawyer didn't take the case that something bad didn't happen or something wrong didn't happen. Those lawyers just felt like they can't win the case. And so they didn't want to take it. A guy like Busby, even if he loses the case, he can still win in the long run. And because like I said, the laws in place don't tell us whether Deshaun Watson did bad things or not.
Yeah.
And so that's where you just kind of left saying, all right, well, you know, he apparently didn't break any laws, because that's the law says he didn't break any laws. Did he do anything wrong? We don't know that. And based off of how the NFL investigates it, they're going to determine what he did wrong and what his punishment should be from that. And that's what I saw on Twitter yesterday. Sean put up a printer poll, and like 62% of the people, and the question on the printer poll was, should what happened with Trevor Bauer have any kind of influence on what happens with Deshaun Watson case? And I was disturbed when I saw that because I'm like, wait a minute. They got to investigate like each case. And one thing in a different league in a completely different set of circumstances has nothing to do with this one right here. Because if they determine that Deshaun Watson, maybe he couldn't be proven in, within the law that he did bad things. But the NFL says, man, I think Deshaun Watson was preying on women per se. You shouldn't play football anymore, right? But if they also determine on the other side of that, they say, hey, you know what? This dude got caught up in a situation to where he put himself in a bad position, and but he didn't do anything that we can credibly feel that he did wrong. Then maybe he gets a couple of games or four games or whatever it is because he put himself in a bad situation. And there's so many things in between those two extremes that you can come to. But Trevor Bauer and what happened in California or wherever he was with his deal, that has nothing to do with what Deshaun Watson and his situation that he had here in Houston. To me, that was just disturbing that a lot of people, the majority of people, felt like, yeah, there should be some type of carryover from one situation to the other.
I think, though, too, one of the problems with that poll was that you could interpret it a lot of different ways. And I think that maybe some people were just answering that from the perspective of, hey, it seems like Major League Baseball hands down more severe penalties than the NFL does. Should the NFL be more severe? Should they have tougher penalties for, you know, like whether these particular alleged transgressions correspond to Tyler Bowers or not? Should the NFL be more aggressive?
I guess you could say that. But my thing is this, I have to look at everything individually. To me, Major League Baseball looked at Bauer's situation and investigated it and said to themselves, this dude doesn't need to be around the game for over a year. Like that's what they, because of whatever happened there, whatever they deemed happened there, because they had to have deemed that something bad happened there, something that was against, you know, Major League Baseball and against, you know, what they deem is what the players in their league are allowed to do and uphold, and they don't have a shield, but uphold their, you know, their logo or whatever it may be. Like, they determined that's what he should get. If the NFL determines that Deshaun Watson did things in a similar manner or to that severity, then he should be punished as such. But it has nothing to do with what went on over there. You know, to me, now the question, if it would have said, will that have any influence on that? I can see it having some influence on it because public opinion is such a important factor when it comes to anything in this world, like public perception, public opinion, especially when you're talking about private entities and private businesses. This is like, you know, that's your lifeblood. If your PR is terrible, you know, it can cost you money. And in your private business, your whole job is to be profitable and to make money. And so I could see it happening that way, but should it happen that way? Hell no. I think one thing has nothing to do with the other. I think the people that are investigating the NFL have a job to do. They need to do their job. And if they do their job and they determine Deshaun Watson doesn't deserve any suspension, then he doesn't deserve any suspension. And if they determine he should be banned from the NFL, then he should be banned from the NFL. That's just kind of where we are, that there are people put in certain roles and they have to make decisions and they have to do their job. But I don't think that, you know, what's going on out there with Bauer should have any influence on what happens with Deshaun Watson.
Hey, John McClain joins us in just about an hour, and you can join us also for a toast to the General John McClain Wednesday, June 15th at the Houston Improv. It's going to be hosted by Sean Pendergast, who will be back on Monday. Special guests, Mean Joe Green, Kenny Houston, Robert Brazil, Patty Smith, Dan Pastorini, Elvin Bethea, Gary Kubiak, Don Rule, and more. Tickets are on sale now. They are going fast. There's not many left. I just got an email from the boss last night. I can't remember what the exact number was. It's not many. Buy your tickets at the Houston Improv or Ticketmaster.com. It's a toast to the General John McClain. Up next, our Wade Smith was once coached by a Nick Saban. Maybe you've heard of him. Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban took jabs at each other next week. I got to hear Wade Smith's 2 cents on exactly what's going on between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.